Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Don McGuire. Man, we got a terrific show for you this evening. You know, I look back and I'm very fortunate to be able to share the aspects of the sport that I do. And it appears we're going to have technical difficulties right off the get. No, actually, it went ahead and rang both calls through. You know, when you look at the art of jiu-jitsu, it's tremendously beautiful, you know, and you just have this way. It has its way of capturing you, devouring you. As 3.5 years ago, I started shooting it, and I'll be quite honest with you, I couldn't stand it. But the more I shot it, the more I understood it, the more I fell in love with it. Today we have a legend in the art of jiu-jitsu on the show, that being Professor John Awano. John, how are you doing today?
Hey, good evening, everyone. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to spend the next hour with you.
Most definitely. You know, I told you before that my show kind of takes a little dip, different aspects. Now, there's two aspects to Professor John Awano. That is the one on the mat, and the other is that of the ocean. You know, when you look at the surfing aspect of your life and you look at the mat aspect of your life, what do you extract or contrive from both aspects, Professor?
You know, in surfing and in life, you know, every time you go to the beach, to the ocean, and paddle out, every day is different. You know, every hour the tide, you know, when the tide changes, you have to deal with the surf. You have to understand how to deal with it. You know, the same with life. You know, every day you'll never know what comes in front of you. So, you know, it's very interesting how, you know, the two are related, because you'll never know what really is in front of you until it's right there. You know, in surfing, you see a wave coming, you know, you try to paddle hard, try to catch it. Sometimes, you know, for whatever reason, you just don't get it. You trip, you slip, you know, same in life. You're out in the streets, you know, you drive around, you have to deal with different individuals, and you have to, you know, do the best you can to handle things.
I love that. The complexity of the way you stated that is tremendous, and it is so true to fact. You know, I kind of want to ask you a little bit deeper of a question. You know, when you look into Professor John Awano, the surfing side, what aspect does DJ Drilling have in connection with you, and what keeps you going back to that aspect?
Well, you know, in jiu-jitsu, we drill a lot. You know, we even the things that we are not good at, we want to be familiar with it. So we drill. In surfing, you want to try different ways to be better at it. You know, duck diving is not always the easiest. I'm not that great at it, but I try to find ways to be good at it. Talk to my friends. I have a lot of friends that are very good surfers, pros. Some are, you know, just grew up surfing and they're good at what they do. Every individual out there has a different way of doing things. And the same with jiu-jitsu. You ask every professor out there, they have different ways. They have different interpretations of a technique. So, you know, you have to take each technique from every professor and try to see how you can implement it, you know, to your game. The same with surfing is, you know, people will give you different ideas. You know, put your foot back a little bit. You gotta dig deeper when you paddle. Everyone's different. You know, size, shape, you know, the way we think, Not everybody thinks the same way. Not everyone, you know, moves the same way. So it's very interesting how, you know, different ideas have the same meaning.
It truly is. The aspect, and I appreciate your words, Professor, because they're profound. The aspect that I was initially talking about, and I apologize for not being more assertive in where I was going with the question, was I watched a video you did with DJ Dryling, the custom surfboard shop, and I said that wrong. And yeah. You know, what I love about the show is, like we talked about earlier, it shows different aspects of you. You very well correlated the aspect of what you thought, but you know, I saw a relationship through that video that, you know, you can only gain over time. And as you and I both know in life, there's the path that we walk on, and the trust level between them, you know, amongst the individuals is truly something that grows over time, and it's not ascertained overnight. What allows you to have that type of friendship and aspect in the surf world?
That's pretty deep and intense right there. You know, many of my friends I've had for many, many years, especially in particular in jiu-jitsu. Many of my friends in jiu-jitsu I've had from the very, very beginning. My personality is I'm a very outgoing individual. Everywhere I go, I always manage to try to make friends. My son asked me when he was young, he goes, "Dad, whenever we go to the beach, why do you always talk to everybody? We haven't even parked the car and you're talking to people." And I said, "Listen, you know, these are my friends. I want to say hi to them, you know. I want to wave at them. I'm going to wave to them and all that stuff. It's important that you surround yourself with people that, you know, you can relate and learn from them." And people, and I told them, it's like to have friends, you need to be a friend. It's very difficult to make friends if you don't say anything. And I said, you know, it's just my personality. I don't really think about it. I just do it. And you know, there are individuals that are not in the same field as I am. So, you know, it's a little difficult, but, you know, it's a personality thing for me. So I find it a lot easier to really relate with different individuals. Where I surf, I surf with all types of individuals: engineers, doctors, lawyers, firefighters, electricians, contractors. You know, they come from all walks of life, and you know, for some reason we share the same, you know, bond, which is the love of the ocean and love for surfing, and that pretty much takes us, you know, pretty far as, you know, conversation goes.
Yeah, truly does. You know, life is so dictated anyway anymore. It's an honor to hear you speak of, you know, friendship in that aspect. We're going to go back to the mat, and you know, right now I'm gonna toss the mic to Ron. And Ron, it's your time, bro.
Yeah.
Hey, Ron.
John, welcome to the show. I'm so glad
to
be here tonight. And Don, thank you again for having me come up back on the show. This is, to be able to interview with somebody of this professor's magnitude is a complete honor for me, who I've only recently started my jiu-jitsu a year and a half ago, almost 2 years now. So I laugh because in the beginning of my career, I've done MMA for so long, but now that I'm transitioning to the jiu-jitsu world, I'm starting to meet all these legends of the sport. It's the way that it's influencing my ideas of jiu-jitsu to be able to see my history already. John, Professor Alano, I did want to jump automatically right into your beginning. And I know most of you use Goldie's ways, but you have a legacy that surpasses most people in the United States. Like your ability to reference people like Carlos Gracie Sr. and Jean-Jacques Machado back when they first came to America and began teaching and training is probably unsurpassed on the West Coast at this point. Could you talk to us a little bit about, we know the story of your training Hapkido and then you came into Jiu-Jitsu. Can you talk to us a little bit about how that began for the people who don't know your story and then lead into how did you end up linking up with Carlos Gracie Sr. and being able to be a student of his?
Well, since I was young, I've always been involved in martial arts. Growing up, I trained in Filipino stick fighting for many years. And when I was living in Chicago, I had heard about Aikido and I decided I'll give it a try. And one thing led to another, and this was back in the 80s, and I really enjoyed it, and I ended up going to Japan. Lived there for a year, and moved there with a girlfriend. And she was like, "Well, you know, when we go back, I want to move to LA." And I said, "All right, I have family in LA. It's no big deal. I can, call my dad." And so I ended up staying with an uncle for a couple of months till I found my own place. And I continued to do Aikido on the side. At that time, my brother-in-law, back in like early 1993, he had started training with Hoist Gracie. He had heard about it through a friend, and he would tell me, "Oh, come on over to the house and blah blah blah, this and that. I'll show you how to do it." It's like, "Nah, I really don't care. Not interested. I don't have the time." And this was before the UFC, but then something happened that I decided, well, I'll come over and hang out with you, and we can talk about it. And that was pretty much it. He had a group of friends that he trained with on weekends, and they would spend 4 or 5 hours on the mat. There's like 4 or 5 of them, and I started spending Friday nights with him for 2 hours, and he'd show me their drills. And back in the day, there's no videos, there was nothing to reference, so everything I learned was basically from what he taught me. So we did that for many months. I would go to his house on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, and eventually, several months down the road, I decided, well, I'll probably start taking lessons. And at that time, Jean-Jacques was in Tarzana, and I was working in the valley at that time, which was about 4 miles away. So I went over to Jean-Jacques, and I really liked his facility and how he taught. And he had John Machado there, and Renato Magno. He had all the OGs that were there, Eddie Bravo. And that's how I know Eddie from back in Jean-Jacques, and a bunch of other people that are still to this day still training. So I was at Jean-Jacques. I'm training 3 days a week, 3-4 days a week, and then on weekends I'd drive down to my brother-in-law's house in Lakewood and spend hours just drilling for hours. And one day one of his friends was going to UCLA and met a Brazilian guy who was learning English at the UCLA campus. So he started talking, he got excited, and he was telling my brother, it's like, "Hey, should I ask him?" The guy was a purple belt. He said, "Should I ask him if he wants to come and teach us? We'll buy him dinner, blah, blah, and this and that, and see what he's up to." And so he talked to the guy and said, "Sure." So on Saturdays, they would drive down and spend 4 hours in the garage with like 6-7 people. They would drill and train every Saturday, like clockwork, and then they added Sunday to it. And then in sometime in 94, that's when one of Carlson Gracie's students, he was a purple belt, Marcelo Hertz, he teaches in Miami right now. He was in Los Angeles with another friend, Marcio Nava, who's also a black belt now down in the South Bay in L.A. They were both going to UCLA to learn English, and they started going to my brother-in-law's house, and we got to be really good friends. So that went on, and one day, I would take both of them to Janjak, and Janjak really was really nice to have them over because, back in the day, having a purple belt from Brazil, especially two of them, that were really good. It's kind of rare. Not many jiu-jitsu guys were in the U.S. at that time. So I would both take them to Janjak's twice a week. And one day, my friends was like, hey, my master, Carlson Gracie Sr. is in Los Angeles and he's opening a school in UCLA, just outside of UCLA. And I'm like 10 minutes away. And when he said that, and I said, who, what? Everything that we knew at that time was about, Horio and Gracie, the Gracie Academy, Hoist Gracie. It's like Carlson was not very popular at that time here. Not many people have heard of him. But he said, oh, I guarantee you, come with me. We'll go meet him. And, he was so excited and happy that his master was in town. And I said, sure, I agreed to go with him. And I met the old man. And, he gave me a big hug. He was like a freaking bear. He's huge. And, I'm a short Filipino guy. So to me, everyone's big. So we hung out. His English was very, very limited. But, he was just a great guy. And, took me to the gym and said, come train here. So I slowly started training with him. And the rest is pretty much history. He lived about a mile from me when the Westwood Academy, the first academy, opened. So I spent pretty much every day with him at his apartment, hanging out, I'd drive him around because, he wasn't familiar with the area. And then he moved four blocks from me. At that time, we ended up closing the school in the Westwood area. We had nowhere to train. Steve Petromelli, who is a boxing coach, at that time had met them and told us about this gym in the Venice area. It's like, it's a karate gym. I can talk to the guys. So we went there, and I don't know what happened, but I managed to negotiate for us to use the small room. It's a really small room at the karate studio for $100 a month. So that's, when Vitor was here, pretty much who's who, the Carlson Gracie team would fly out here and train with them. So that's why I know a lot of these OGs that, to this day, are doing their great things and leaving a good mark in jiu-jitsu. Liboria and I are really close. Mario Sperry, Alan Goes, Conan, all those guys. And, Cassio Cardoso would fly out here and they'd train. But I got to hang out. I've known Vitor since he was 17 years old. And then Rodrigo Medeiros came around 96. And, it's like, who's this guy? He's got this big fro, always smiling, just all around great guy. And we started training every day, and I pretty much convinced him to stay. And so we trained a little bit, and we were able to get some help from John Peters, who's a Hollywood producer. And he helped us start the Carlson Gracie Academy in Hollywood, West Hollywood. It was borderline Beverly Hills. He set up this new facility. It was really nice at that time. And we moved in 96. And, Joe Rogan was training with us. Brian Callen was training with us. We had Todd Medina was training with us. Todd Medina, before he was part of the Carlson Gracie team, was driving from Huntington Beach all the way to West Hollywood to train. You know, he would spend hours on the road. Back in the day, it was common for people to drive 3-4 hours just to train. And so we had a lot of, you know, Hollywood people that would come by, a lot of fighters would come by. You know, all the heavy hitters from the Carlson Gracie team would come to LA and spend time with us. So it was really a great experience, and I get to meet all these great individuals, and to this day many of them are still my friends. Yeah, and I asked Rodrigo to stay, and he's been around for over 20 years, and you know, he's doing great. He's probably got over 100 black belts probably around this time.
That's crazy. Ron, you got any more questions?
I'll let you jump in on it. Like, I'm just trying to soak in all this information. It's amazing to hear these stories of these legends.
Oh, yeah, you know, Professor, you know, I kind of want to take you to just a little whimsical moment before we further this interview. There's a statement out there that you pretty much made about Ray Burgos, you know, that once you started sparring with him, you felt that he was manhandling you, even though he weighed, you know, 50 to 20 pounds, you know, lighter than you. But you said that in your statement that it felt like you were going against a machine that was toying with you. Take me through that moment, what it's like to be there with Ray Burgos and have that aspect.
The first time I trained with him, you know, he had been married to my sister for a few years, and he was a very quiet guy, didn't really talk much, but when jiu-jitsu was the subject, you couldn't shut him up. he was just like, oh, hoist this, hoist that, and at that time I was like, dude, what the heck are you drinking? I mean he would not shut up. I mean, you just say jiu-jitsu and he can talk for hours about jiu-jitsu. You know, he was training about 3-4 days a week, and plus the time he spent with a lot of his friends. So he said, oh, come on, you should try it. And I was like, dude, you know, I outweigh you, and you know, I'm better shape than you. You know, he had around when I grappled with him, he had about a year experience. I just couldn't do anything. I couldn't pin him. You know, he would sweep me left and right. He would mount me. He would take my back. You know, I pretty much muscled my escape, but he was just being nice to me because he didn't want my sister getting mad. But that pretty much convinced me and you know, to try it. And he was basically nice about it. He goes, look, why don't you try it for like a month? Come every weekend. I'll spend a couple hours with you on Saturdays and Sundays. Come Fridays when you need to. And you know, I'll just you and I won't even have my friends. And I said, okay, that sounds fair. And we got to be really, really good friends because of jiu-jitsu. We would talk for hours all about jiu-jitsu. That was pretty much it. But he was slick. You know, he was a skinny dude. He was fairly flexible, and he was pretty damn strong for someone that small. You know, great guy. I love him. I'm very grateful for, you know, the introduction to jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, you know, you look at all aspects of your life, you know, you get your black belt in jiu-jitsu, but you look at the times that this aspect had been being created in the art of jiu-jitsu, and you look at the early 90s when, you know, it truly came over here, and, you know, the beginning of it, I guess you could say, you know, had the path had started to be laid, some, you know, stones were being put in. What did it mean for you not only to get your third-degree black belt under Rodrigo Medeiros, but also to be one of the first Filipinos ever to have that type of achievement in your legacy or in the creation of your legacy?
Well, you know, I did not think any of these things. Many people know I don't compete. I've never competed, but I really enjoyed being on the mat. I enjoyed training with my friends. I enjoyed learning from as many people as I could. It never dawned on me that, you know, I'd be the first this, be the first that. I did what I did because I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the company I had. Most importantly, I really loved being around the friends that I had at that time that helped me with my growth in jiu-jitsu. Back then, it was taboo for people to jump around different schools.
Yeah.
But, you know, Paulson Gracie would get mad at me when I would bring my friends from other gyms and say, "What are you doing? You know, we're, you know, they're from this gym or that gym." And I didn't look at it that way. And I explained to them, I said, "Listen, you know, we're very informal." I said, "Look, Carlson, these are my friends. You know, many of them drive far. They come to visit me. They want to meet you. And, you know, they enjoy training. This, you know, they want to learn as much as they can." So eventually he realized what I was doing, you know, throughout the years, that I made so many friends that wanted to be part of us, that wanted to be there with us, because, you know, it's like boundaries. What boundaries? You want to train, that's fine. You know, come by, train. I never turn anyone down, you know, when they wanted to come and visit and train. You know, when we were in West Hollywood, when Vitor, Rodrigo, and Carlson were out of town, I taught most of the classes. I was at the gym 6 days a week. You know, I truly enjoyed it, and I try to invite as many of my friends from other gyms to come and visit. To this day, they're still my friends. And it's, you know, it's a great, it makes me feel great, and I'm really proud of what I've accomplished, because if it weren't for my friendship with all these guys around, you know, I wouldn't be around. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now. I'd probably be doing some office work. But because I didn't really think much about it, it's like I like what I do. I'm going to get on the mat. I'm going to make a lot of friends. And like I said, you know, earlier in the podcast, it really boils down to the personality that I have. I like people. I enjoy meeting people. I enjoy spending time with good friends, and I enjoy learning from people, and, you know, bringing people together so that they can learn from each other. And to this day, I still do that. I mean, over 20 years later, I still do it.
Would you say that aspect of you is the most relevant and pertinent aspect of why you feel knowledge, sharing and teaching knowledge, is more pertinent than competing?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's just my opinion, but, you know, I believe and I feel that I've been around long enough, and I have a decent amount of following that truly believes in what I want to get done, or what I want to accomplish, you know, to get my point across and to share and to let everyone know you don't have to be great, but if you try hard enough, you'll be better than the person that doesn't do anything or the person that doesn't do much. I mean, I have like 8 affiliate schools in the United States. I have 10 in New Zealand. I mean, you know, my New Zealand affiliates, they're fairly new, but they're very loyal as hell. You know, it started when I left New Zealand in April. There were like 3-4 schools. Now we're up to 10. And they like the idea of what I have to offer. Not that, you know, it's like, I'm great. No, I'm good at delegating things. I'm good at bringing people together. And I think that that really says a lot when you're able to bring a big group together to learn, have fun, make friends, and grow. I mean, it really boils down to making friendships that last, because everything else comes together. I mean, you know, talented people start somewhere.
Yes, I have to agree with you.
Learning from friends.
Yeah, you truly do, and I couldn't agree with you even more. You know, I'm 53 years old in life, and I tell you what, I have a greater understanding and appreciation of just all aspects of life the older I get, and the more I look back at the path I walked, it truly has been more defined in the last couple of years. You know, we at our age, we have a greater appreciation for the path that we walk when we overlook our shoulder. It teaches us moving forward. I'm going to pass the mic to Ron, and I'm going to make him ask a question. I'm always sitting there enthralled because of the stature of who you are, Professor, but I'm going to force him to ask you a question, Ronald.
Yeah, I sit there, I listen to you guys talk about 53 years old. I must be the young guy on the crew here at 46 now. I never feel like that when I get on the mat anymore, but okay, I'll take it as a compliment these days. So, John, like, you grew up in jiu-jitsu and your jiu-jitsu path with some of the legendary fighters in jiu-jitsu as well as MMA. And you talk about how, you know, you never turn people away. You bring people into Carlson Gracie Sr. and how that was somewhat frowned upon, you know, originally. And I've had the opportunity, you know, in the MMA to travel and train with some very high-level academies. And it's always been one of those, when you're dealing with very high-level fighters, there's always a dangerous sport here. Jiu-jitsu is for everybody, but ultimately when you boil it down, it is a very violent and dangerous sport. People regularly injured by accidents, it happens, you know, it's the contact.
Absolutely.
When you're dealing with men of these caliber, of fighters of these caliber, I don't even say men, because across the board, you're talking about some of the best ever. How were you able to navigate back and forth between from individual fighters, from different academies, from different worlds, from different schools, and bring them all together as one?
Yeah, that's a million-dollar question right there. You know, it's not easy. It's probably one of the toughest jobs or things to do, is to make sure you manage it properly. I think there's etiquette when professionals know what they're there for, you know, either visiting a gym. You know, it's different when you're training for a fight. You know, that's you basically, you're doing a training with your own team. But if you're visiting, you know, it's tough, because it really boils down to your training etiquette. I've seen people get kicked out because it got out of hand. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen. But many of the pro fighters that do fight and they travel around and visit other, you know, pro gyms or other gyms, they tend to be very respectful, and they know the rules, you know, the unspoken rules, so to speak. You don't go to someone's house and start a brawl, you know, and that's just doesn't work like that. If you want to be invited, you know, you be respectful and you train. I mean, you know, you have to know your limitations. I mean, it's really tough. It's very tough.
And you've been able to do that, you know, like you told us, you've never competed before.
Yeah, no, I have no desire.
Bring all the and that's yeah. So this, you know, I was talking to Felicia before I got on with you guys. I'm going to be coming out to LA this week for the UAE tournament. I'm a parafighter.
Oh,
I lost my leg below the knee in a motorcycle accident quite a few years ago. And then through the martial arts and being able to achieve a high level of recovery and ability. And I hooked up with the police last year, and we were talking about, you know, back when we were discussing what your lineage, your heritage, like typically women weren't accepted into this. And as far as I know, I was one of the first parafighters to come out in the martial arts. And 20 years later, now we have federations that are picking us up, and, you know, women in the academy are the norm and the standard now. Now,
right.
Para athletes are coming in, and whereas when I first came out 23 years ago, I was turned away from academies. Now, I'm very fortunate because I can travel from academy to academy, and I'm given almost a grace. And it's a delicate subject to talk about among para fighters because we want to be treated as equal, but the reality is we're just different enough that jiu-jitsu, in my mind, has changed from that 20 to 30 years ago to where it was literally a fighting art taught to the highest level combatants, to now it's accepted across nations as the way of a true martial arts way. For if you've never having fought before, that says something about you as a man, but also, I mean, your ability to coach, your ability to bring people together, your ability to transmit these ideas that you have across individual to individual to help these legends in the sport come up. What would you say that's inside you personally? Like, what is it about jiu-jitsu and you, the link that you have with other fighters as you go across the board that allows you to transition from somebody like Mario Spiri to another legend in the sport, Felicia O, and now you're looking at para fighters come up through, you know, to kids, things like that. How does that cross boundaries like that?
Well, first off, I make it clear, you know, especially to all my students, that I don't claim to know everything. I know what I know, and I can apply what I know, but what makes a good coach is not so much a great fighter, but someone that can articulate and that's able to get the point across to someone that's learning. Jiu-jitsu has grown and changed tremendously in the last two decades. If you really think about it, and look at the statistics, the number of competitors compared to the number of practitioners, there's a huge difference. You know, the competitors, I don't know what the percentage is, but majority of the people that train enjoy the art, enjoy learning, enjoy training, enjoy, you know, just the martial aspect of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. You know, they can take it wherever they want to take it. They can take it to as far as MMA, or if they want to just do it as a recreational sport, or they want to make money on this, you know, in the future. It's, you know, it opens up a big window for everyone.
You know, I like that. You know, Professor, there's something I always wanted to ask somebody of your magnitude. As you know, I've interviewed some of the best to ever grace the mat. You know, it often comes across my mind as I shoot multiple seminars a year with different aspects and generations of the art. When you have that moment that you're just standing on the mat or sitting in the, you know, on the mat and you're the only one in the gym, what type of reflection do you have, Professor, upon the path that you took, the place that you're at, and what the future holds?
You know, when Rodrigo decided to move to San Diego full time, I decided to start my gym with an old friend and an old student of ours, Johnny Ramirez, and you know, just to have a place where we had simple goals: have a gym where we have enough students, you know, to make a little living. We didn't have any, you know, high expectations as, you know, other gyms where, you know, we're going to be big and all this and all that. We taught, we brought in students, and we built our own team. I look back and really appreciated all the little things that we did for all our students that trained with us briefly, and the ones that train with us to this day. I have one black belt that's been with me since he was 8 years old. He was in my kids' class. He's in his late 20s now. His name's Noah Tillis. And I'm so proud of this kid that, you know, he decided to open his own gym and chose the jiu-jitsu path. He's doing great. He competes a lot. He fights MMA, and his gym is growing, and he is making a big difference in many people's lives, from kids to adults. And it just makes me very happy to see that many people have chosen the same path I have. You know, I have changed the way I looked at things. Five years ago, I left my old gym, and I was just teaching in different places, and then I started the Tsunami Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Fortunate enough to be able to run the program out of a Taekwondo school run by Andre Lima and Chris Lima in Culver City and in Torrance. And it just changed the way I do things. Now I have found balance. I really appreciate having the students coming to us and wanting to learn from us. Not so much to compete, but just to be able to have a place to train, not have the stress, you know, and the worries about, oh, this and that, or life itself, making people happy. I think that that makes me happy when I see others happy. I mean, I'm fairly simple. I have no great aspirations. If I can make a difference in my students' lives, then, you know, I have accomplished things. And that's probably one of my biggest accomplishments, is seeing my students, you know, day in and day out, come train and enjoy being on the mat. Fast forward 5 years and they're still training. And they've become better individuals on and off the mat. That to me is the greatest satisfaction in my life, is to see others happy and me part of it.
I think that's what's keeping the art of jiu-jitsu alive, is professors like yourself, you know, that truly love it. And it's going to lead me into my next question, which is kind of an elephant in the room question, Professor. You don't have to answer it if you don't want to. It was a question that was brought up on my show with Professor Jenna Bishop at a Gracie Humada in San Diego. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people define the sport or the art in two different aspects: the old man jiu-jitsu compared to new era jiu-jitsu. And, you know, as Ron spoke earlier, you know, women and parafighters are being accepted into the sport now. But Professor Jenna Bishop brought up on my show that she feels that in some essence, the old school jiu-jitsu aspect doesn't want to allow equality with women in the sport. What is your thoughts in that aspect? Because I hold what you say in high regard, because you're a tremendous aspect and one of the pioneers in jiu-jitsu. What are your thoughts when you hear other professors say that inequality and sexuality are an issue when it comes to the sport of jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, I think that many of it is a cultural thing, some personal. I have known friends that don't allow women in their jiu-jitsu jiu-jitsu classes. I have always had women in class. I mean, back in the day, Valerie Worthington is one of our black belts when she trained at New Breed with Johnny Ramirez and I, and she's a very successful writer, and she's very successful in her own right, and has helped with the growth of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu out east since she's been back out east. I think people don't understand that what people don't understand is women in Jiu-Jitsu is increasing. Women taking up Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is increasing. There will always be people out there that are what you may say old fashioned or old school, or whatever. It's a personal thing, and I don't know how, if it's good or bad. In my opinion, from my personal opinion, I think that everyone should be allowed to train. Yeah, and I don't want to dictate what others should do, with their own program. So, I hope that eventually they'll change their mind. They see, how jiu-jitsu has grown, how jiu-jitsu has evolved, how jiu-jitsu has changed many lives. Sometimes it takes things like these for people to change their thoughts and what they feel. So we can only hope that with majority or many of the schools accepting, promoting, motivating and encouraging people from all walks of life, all any type of disability, that they are welcome on the mat. That, if they make the effort, it all starts with getting on the mat. Talking about something and not doing something about it are two different things. People say, this school doesn't allow this, but do you even train? You've heard of those armchair quarterbacks, right? they talk the talk, but if you tell them to walk, they won't even crawl.
That's so
true.
Know
what I'm talking about.
Exactly,
you have people. You have people that talk smack. You have people that antagonize people. You have people that will do whatever they can to get their 15 minutes of fame. You know what? Unless you get on the mat, unless you put the sweat, the tears, the time, and the effort, the beating, you have nothing to say. What you say is irrelevant.
Exactly. Because
to me, it doesn't matter.
And it shouldn't. And the reason I felt I could ask, because I know Vitor Belfort personally, I know Todd Medina, and I know Joe, so I know I'm covered as far as the friendship level is concerned. I was like, wait a minute, I'm kind of scared to ask him this question, but... You know, I got one more before I pass it to Ron, and it's kind of deep. They well, you can ask Todd. They call me the Oprah Winfrey of MMA or, you know, sports talk. But Professor, when you get that moment and you just stand there, you know, in life we always have these reflections. And I'm a reflective person because, you know, of our age, I always like to look back. So when you do, you walk by the mat and you look at it and you get a reflection of who you are, Professor, what do you see?
Where do I start? I opened the door of the gym for a morning class. I walk in and think, who's going to show up this morning? Why do they want to train? Whoever shows up is going to get the best instruction. And whoever shows up will have a great day. And I'm going to be there to make that happen. And it only takes one person to get on the mat with you. And it starts with one individual to make the change, and it takes one individual to spread the word. You have one individual telling others, you had a great time in class, had a great time with coach. And I see the rest coming to class because of one individual.
Wow.
And it like I said, it everything boils down to, if I can make a difference in one individual's life, then that individual is going to make a difference in someone else's life. And it's paying forward. And like I said, I'm a fairly simple person. When I see people happy, it makes me happy. So if I can see a student come to class, leave class with a huge smile on his face and telling his friends, man, I had a great time. I really learned a lot. I'll be back tomorrow, or I'll be back in 2 days. And he's going to bring his friends. So it's called what do they call that in the military? Force multiplier. That's what the Green Berets do, right? They go out and train people in small groups and make them fight like a bigger group.
Quality over quantity.
Yep. I mean, I have a few students that are special operators, and wherever they are in the world, they always think of me. I get a call. Hey, Chief, what's up? Where you at? Oh, I'm here. I'm there. You know, and I know that I made a difference in their life.
You truly made a difference in mine, Professor. I'm going to toss the mic to Ron. Let him ask you a couple more, and then we'll wrap this up, Ron.
Sure.
Yeah. We are starting running against the clock now. So I'm going to go with a couple of my friends who are just starting jiu-jitsu now, and one of them is the young lady, Jamie. And so, Professor, could you give some advice to those of us that are new to the sport, and especially those of us that are brand new to this way of life? It's, for me, it's not jiu-jitsu is not a sport. It's a way of living. And that's what I've been taught over the last couple of years. Can you give some advice and some tips and some guidance for the new people out there that are just beginning their jiu-jitsu journey?
Absolutely. You know, the hardest and the most difficult part of jiu-jitsu is making the time and getting yourself to the gym, to class. once you get there, everything else will start falling into place. If you're just starting, it's important to focus on the fundamentals in class. And one of the most difficult things to you will encounter as a beginner is the first several times or the first year or the first several months, because everyone's different, you're sparring. All the training that you learn in class goes out the window. It's just the way it is. I have seen it countless times where the entire class drills the techniques perfectly. Come training time, everything goes out the window, and they're back to like trying to pull each other's hair. It's a process. It's a process. People with no grappling experience, no judo, no wrestling, or just straight off the street, the first thing you're going to learn is to defend. You got to learn how to defend. And then you start to learn how to counter. But being humans, we want to be on top and win. That's just... I mean, do you agree?
Oh, I agree. Yes,
I mean, look, you're like, but I'm big. It doesn't matter. You're going to learn how to defend. And then you're going to learn how to counter. And then you're going to learn how to be on top. And that's the progression from a standpoint of someone straight off the street with no experience. You know, some people are, more in tune and are a little bit more talented. They pick up things quicker than others. So you focus on you. Focus on your limitations. Focus on, what your body can take. You can't be doing certain moves where you don't have the flexibility or requires flexibility. You need to start with something fairly simple. Get your body strong, get your flexibility, and the way you think makes a big difference. You need to be able to implement the techniques, regardless of how your brain thinks. Some people will start right, some people will start left. However you do the technique, as long as you can make it work for you, that is the most important thing. If you can make the technique work for you, it doesn't matter what people say about your technique. It's yours. I tell my students, when you learn jiu-jitsu, as you get better, it will be your jiu-jitsu. You develop your specific style. Yes, you train here. Yes, you drill like everyone else. But as your jiu-jitsu gets better, the more you train, as the years go by, you will develop your own style. You will move a certain way. You will have your go-to moves. You have certain things that you do that others are not able to do or others have difficulty dealing with. And that's the beauty of jiu-jitsu is everybody's unique. Everybody's different. Everybody has their own style. Some fare better than others. Some small guys do better against big guys. Some big guys do better against, their guys their size or vice versa. Everybody's different. We deal with different individuals. And it's how you deal with it that makes you, your jiu-jitsu different. And that's how you get better, is understanding what your limitations are, what you can do, and trying to implement them and try to study what others do so you can counter and maybe implement some of the things that they do to your game.
It's incredible.
But you got to show up to class. You don't get better You don't get better by talking about jiu-jitsu. You don't get better by telling someone how you're going to do this and do that. You have, you know, it's an action sport. You have to physically do it.
Most definitely.
Does that make sense?
It does.
You have to do it.
It certainly does. Yeah.
I want to be good at jiu-jitsu,
in the door,
coach.
The hardest part.
Well, right. I mean, coach, I want to be good at jiu-jitsu. What do I need to do? It's very simple. Start with 2 to 3 times a week. Show up for class on time. Do the warm-up so you don't get hurt. Stretch, drill, and train smartly.
Tremendous.
The rest is up to you. The rest is up to you.
Truly.
I mean,
Ronald,
does that make sense?
It makes absolute sense to me. Ronald, you're
like
a
lot of people.
Yamasaki, what are your thoughts?
Well, that's the thing is, like, you know, traditional class is half an hour warm up, half an hour skills building, then half an hour of sort of fighting, and everybody wants to be there for the rolling part, of course. You know, that's
right.
That's fun. That's where you get to institute your game. That's where you get to have fun playing with your friends. But
right,
you know, the basis is designed like this by men much greater than me for years and centuries to implement that into your body. And if you just walk into that door, for me personally, just walking through that door, it brings such a sense of relief. And for the next 2 or 3 hours, that's my healthy spot. You know, for 2 or 3 hours, I don't think about the car payment. I don't think about, is the kid sick? I don't think about what deadlines are due. It's just jiu-jitsu, and that's what keeps bringing me back every day.
Well, it'd be kind of difficult to be thinking about your outside life when someone's trying to strangle you, right?
Yes.
I'm like, well, I forgot. I need to send my car payment, and then someone's choking you.
Yes.
I don't think it's a good idea.
Or have someone like you doing the Kusakatami sequence on you and trying to keep a smile on your face.
Right. I mean, you just have to deal with it. And, you know, like I said, we all deal with different situations differently. You know, how you deal with it is another story. I mean, it's never easy. It is never easy. I tell students that train, jiu-jitsu is not easy. If it were easy, we'd all be black belts.
Yes.
We would all be black belts, but just by talking about it. Oh, yeah, man, I was thinking of going to class, but I changed my mind. Oh, you know, I was drilling in my head. It just doesn't work like that. It just doesn't work. I mean, you either go to class or you don't. If you don't go to class, you should feel guilty about it.
Yes, legit.
I tell my students all the time, as much as I want your money, I prefer you come to class. I mean,
because you're in it for the right reasons.
I want your money, but at the same time, I want to see you on the mat. I truly want you to be good at this. And if you're that type of individual that is physically, mentally short of something, if you come to class, you will be a better grappler than you were a year earlier if you showed up consistently. Mm-hmm. You have to. You have to. It just... You can't go to class once a week and expect to be good. It just doesn't, I mean, it's rare. I mean, you have some exceptionally talented people out there that don't try very hard, and yet they're good. I am talking about the average individual. I mean, that's why we take a martial arts, right? You don't want to be the average individual. You learn. I mean, I have a student that sometimes he doesn't know the difference between his right and left.
Yes.
Almost a year later, I ask him, are you enjoying your training? I said, and I know because I see him get his butt kicked all the time. But his response, absolutely, because I'm a better person now than I was a year ago. I kicked my ass a year ago compared to now.
Yes.
I said, okay, well, there it is. That's what it's all about. It's the self-confidence that you gain, right? I mean, achievement is a personal effort. I mean, you have to, I mean, how much of it, how much you want to achieve in jiu-jitsu? Well, it depends on how much effort you want to put into it. You just, zero effort, zero progress. It's the same thing I tell my son. If you want to be good at something, you have to try your best. And if you've given it your best, then that's good. But you have to give it your best.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't give it your best, people will see, oh, he's not really drilling properly. He's just going through the motion. He doesn't want to be here. Well, you're wasting everyone's time. Because everyone else is there for a reason, to train and get better. So if you're going to be there like a tool and you know, not be a team player by, you know, being a good training partner, or you don't do what you need to do to work with your teammates, then what's the use of going to class? Right?
Absolutely right, Professor. You know, I'm just so enthralled. You know, an hour truly isn't enough to even touch or scratch the surface of what you've done for the art of jiu-jitsu. You know, Ronald, do you have anything else that you would like to ask the professor before we kind of start having to wrap things up here, brother?
No, Professor, thank you so much for coming on the show and gracing us with your knowledge.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope that that you thought it was a good one. I was just doing
what
that's
tremendous. I have one more question for you before we kind of start wrapping things up here, and it's a question that I've asked some of the greatest black belt practitioners in the world that have graced my show. You know, it's something that has perplexed my heart because everybody has a different thought, a different analogy on this question, and you're a wise attribute to the origins and the true lineage of the sport. When you look at being a black belt, would you say there's no significant difference than being a white belt at heart? Because you truly are a continuum. You truly are learning every day. So in that type of analogy, how would you look at that, Professor?
I don't know if I'd be able to give you an answer that would make sense. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of stumped right now. I'm kind of like I'm drawing a blank in my head. I don't know. I just like.
It's kind of a deep question, you know.
Yeah, it's very, yes.
You know, I'll give you the answer Rafael Lovato Jr. gave me. He told me in his heart he believes that he is a white belt, as he is, as he is continuing to learn and gain knowledge daily. Although he is a black belt, each day is a learning process, and each day in the art of jiu-jitsu, you take away a profound aspect. So therefore, even though he is a black belt, his heart truly is that of a white, because when you're a white belt, you truly are uninhibited by all aspects, because you're at the beginning, you're at that learning process.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, you know, as a black belt, you're always going to continue to learn. Every day something different comes up. You learn to, I mean, I learn from white belts, you know, as well as other belts. And I think having an open mind and understanding that there's so much to learn out there, we could continue to learn for the rest of our jiu-jitsu careers.
Yes.
So the black belt, yes, you reach your goal, but it's not the end. You continue to learn. Unlike, you know, I'm sure you've heard of people that receive their black belts and retire. But that's not what it's all about. I mean, jiu-jitsu is, you continue. It's a lifestyle. You know, that we do our best to be good at and be better every day.
Yes. And I love your answer. I appreciate it because, you know, it truly does give us an in-depth look into your thoughts. You know, Professor, I'm truly honored and humbled, as with Ronald, that you blessed us with your knowledge and your presence today. I know your time is very valuable. I just have one more aspect that I like to add to my show because I think it's something that's unique in life that most individuals don't do or give their guests an opportunity to. In life, we don't sometimes look back and give thanks to the people that helped create us, the people that instilled intent, the people that gave us that push when we truly need it, and not to leave out the people that stand side by side with us in our journey in life. I'm going to give you an opportunity to thank those people and, you know, because I think life is too short and I don't think it's done enough. So the floor is yours, Professor.
Well, there's so many people to thank. And I think the journey of life, it's just it. It's a journey and it never ends. There's no end. Every day you meet new people. Every day you learn something new. Every day you're thankful for the things that you have, your health, family. You know, I'm grateful for all the great things that jiu-jitsu has given to me, provided for me, all the friends I've made, all the friends that I will be making, you know, in my lifetime because of jiu-jitsu. Like you said, you can never thank people enough for their friendship, for their support, for the love, for everything that they do for us and the things that we do for them. We don't think about it. We do it because that's what friends are for. That's what friendship is about. And that's what we do when we like what we do. We don't think about why we do it. I do it because you're my friend. I do it because I like what I do and I love it. And I hope that it will continue. You know, the good things will continue with my friends and the people that I will meet in the future.
Well said, very beautiful. You know, Professor, at this time I truly like to thank you for taking time out of your schedule, as I know you're a very busy man, to join, you know, my show and share your story with my listeners. I'm going to pass the microphone over to you. If you want to give your affiliation a shout out, give your gym a shout out, or just anything else that you'd like to add to the program. Professor.
Yeah, I want to just thank you for the opportunity to have me in your show. And while I'm on the air, I want to give thanks to my friend and my my training partner, my partner in Tsunami Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Professor Perry Hawk. Perry Hawk has been a longtime friend of mine, and he's a very, very valuable part of Tsunami Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Chris and Andre Lima for the opportunity to run the Jiu-Jitsu program at their Taekwondo school. They've been nothing but great to us, to all our students, to all our affiliates, Brian, John, Gabe, Dave, Justin, Austin, Juan, everyone in New Zealand, so all my fauna. I look forward to seeing everyone in February, and I look forward to having everyone in one place so we could perform the Tsunami Haka. We will be the only team, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu team, that will have our own Haka. It's been written. The actions are being put together right now, and we will be introducing it to the world in the coming months. A lot of exciting things happening for us, and looking forward to making new friends, visiting new places, and meeting people as they come our way. And thank you to all my friends for the last 24 years. It's been a great ride. It will continue to be great. And all my love.
Well, Professor, you truly have blessed my show. Like I said, one show isn't enough to share your story. So in the future, when you do get ready to unveil your Haka to the world, I'd be most humbled and honored if you'd be willing to come back on my show and share that story. Ronald, if you'd like to say your goodbyes to the professor, now is your opportunity.
Don, thanks again for having me on. I'm looking forward to catching up with
you,
after this. And John, Professor, it's been an amazing interview, very powerful. Thank you again for coming on the show with John and I. And, hopefully one of these times I'm out in L.A., I come up and see you in Tsunami. And
Please do. You're always welcome. You know where to find me.
Certainly will. So, all right, my friend. Well, it was good to talk to you. Nice to meet you, Professor. Thank you again for being on.
Thank you, gentlemen.
With us tonight.
And I appreciate the time, and looking forward to chatting with you soon.
Thank you, Professor.
All
thank
right.
you for blessing
Take
my
care.
Show. All right. Goodbye.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Ron, I'll tell you what. Wow. I didn't expect it to run 18 minutes over. I apologize for that. I know you're probably in a hurry to get somewhere, but do you have any correlating thoughts on the knowledge that we just ascertained?
Man, 18 minutes in a lifetime is nothing, right? To be able to sit and talk to these professors like this, it's an honor and a blessing. Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting to speak to somebody who's never competed, but has ascertained such a high level, a pinnacle, a level of respect in this sport, whereas competition is so highly valued. But, just through his personal character, he's brought himself up to one of the highest achievable ranks in here in America, a legend. And so, very lucky.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to coming out and seeing these guys here in another week.
We'll make that happen. I got connections that have connections, but tomorrow we got an exciting show on the parafighter aspect. Me and Ron will be back together again tomorrow to bring you another tremendous show. Ronald, on this closing note, brother, when I got the opportunity to do this show, I felt it was a necessity because I see what your compassion and the love of the art of jiu-jitsu that you ascertain, and I felt being able to have you on the show with one of the greatest that has ever existed on the mat, and it's weird. It's because it's the ones that respect him are the ones that are highly profound in the sport. The ones that have given him his black belt are the ones that are truly legends in this world. So for any of the listeners that are listening to think, how could he become a fifth degree black belt without ever competing? You just listen to the interview, you listen to the stories, you listen to the people that he's trained with, and are the greatest people to ever grace the mat here in America, and they came from Brazil, and he has their respects and their knowledge, and they're the ones that gave him that black belt and that aspect in his life. So that speaks profoundly about him. You know, I never thought that I would ever have a fifth degree black belt that has never competed, but when you hear a story like you say, Ron, you can understand why. On that note, my brother, was truly an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show this evening. I look forward
Thank
to tomorrow.
I'll see you in 24 hours, brother.
Oh, yeah. I hope we all took away something from this show, because I surely did. On that note, I want to thank Finished MMA, Juan Martinez. I want to thank the 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie. Buy Me Mouthguards with Joe Rice. And Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitch Duran. Ronald, is there anybody that you'd like to thank before we go?
Of course, Yamasaki Academy. That's my family out here. And, you know, we're hooking up with We Defy and Mission 22, which are two veteran jiu-jitsu foundations. I'm a veteran myself, and both of these organizations are doing really good work. So hopefully I'll be working with them more in the future.
Oh, most definitely. Until then, until tomorrow, my brother, actually. Until tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
We will meet again. To all my listeners, thank you so much for tuning into the special episode today. I hope you took away as much knowledge as I did. With that, we're going to go to a commercial break, and then we'll lead out with a music intro, or exit, I guess you should say. I'm still caught up in the professor's words. On that note, thank you, my brother Ron. Until tomorrow, God bless you.
What up, it's your boy Slone Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in a world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats. At a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of the Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.